Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wayne.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the Super Nintendo Show.
Because it's super duper.
Indeed, it is. And it's the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And it's a Super Nintendo edition of the Nintendo Show. And we delayed it a month, but it's time to talk about Chrono Trigger.
Did we delay it a month?
Yeah, we did.
Because the Chrono Talk.
Right, because we didn't do a Super Nintendo Show last month at all.
Oh.
Because we were going to talk about Chrono Trigger, but you couldn't make it. Ryan has dabbled in it really briefly. We've both played it. We've both beaten it, yes?
Yeah, I've beaten it.
Yeah, so they've
beaten it a couple times.
So yeah, we're the...
I think so.
Well, how many... Well, we'll probably touch on this a little bit later. How many endings did you go for?
Oh, only about maybe two or three.
Okay.
Nothing crazy.
Yeah, nor did I. I don't...
Yeah, I mean, there's like, how many, like 50-something, I want to say?
No, it's close.
They're only like minor changes. It's nothing drastic. Like, the credits has different background stuff. Like, it's nothing like huge. Like, Chrono dies at the end of one and the other one, you know.
Well.
The one chick gets addicted to heroin. Like, it's nothing huge.
That would be kind of a funny ending, though, to see, like, do you say Marley or Marl?
I said the one chick. I don't know which one.
Is it
Marley or Marl?
I always pronounce it Marley.
I always said Marl.
Okay.
Just to be different, I'll say that.
Either way, but like that's the ending. She's like in an opium den and she's all coked out. Yeah. Perfect. That's the best ending you can get.
The robot's been turned into a porta potty. It just gets really dark.
All right. A frog is being served in a restaurant. Anyway,
hey, frog legs, that's fine dining, John.
Speaking
get
of
a little class in your day.
Speaking of the darkest timeline, we've devolved already. Okay. There is a little bit of housekeeping to do, some history about this game that I do want to get into before
where is Ryan tonight?
Ryan, he is... Should we make something up, or should we just say he's at movie night?
Well, I mean, I think we need to make something up, you know, something drastic.
He's watching a pornographic movie with some of his friends. They all get together, and they have a group jerk off. And
it's all males.
Well, of course,
Busey's there.
Gary Busey is
at his house.
Gary Busey just watches, though. Gary Busey doesn't
in the corner.
So Ryan
randomly just flicks all the light, stares at them, and then flicks it back off.
They turn on the movie, and they just take a load off, so to speak. Okay, good. Should we move forward now? Okay, let's talk about some serious art at this point.
Oh.
And I feel like we should speak in like low voices, not only because this is a very serious artistic game, but also the lights are off. So
it's very spooky right now. It's also very romantic.
Yeah, it's an after
dark.
I'm
having a hard time keeping my hands off, John.
It's an after dark episode. I don't think you should. It's an after dark episode of the Nintendo Show here.
Oh my god.
Seriously, there are no lights on. I'm trying to read my notes by the glow of the computer monitor. Okay, Chrono Trigger was developed and published by Square, not yet Square Enix at this point, because it was originally released August 22nd, 1995.
Ooh.
And
I was seven.
Yeah. I was... Oh, God. Never mind. I don't remember. I don't know how old I was. I'm not
well,
even
how much older are you than me are you now?
I don't even know. I'm 31.
I'm 28. So you're 3 years. You were 10.
I was 10. Yes.
There you go.
I was.
Math is fun. I can math.
Very good.
Stay in school, kids.
So the staff of the development team was and is viewed as this dream team of Super Nintendo RPG developers. So the game was designed by Hironobu Sakaguchi, who was, of course, the creator of Final Fantasy. And the designer of many of those games. The game had three directors, actually. It was directed...
Traits in Spanish.
Yes, indeed. It was directed by Takashi Tokita, who was the lead designer of Final Fantasy IV. He also more recently directed Final Fantasy The Four Heroes of Light.
I'm surprised they didn't make me read that name.
I thought about it, but... I feel like we could probably go on about this game for a while, so for the sake of succinctness... I will read the names. Takeda also directed a lot of the mobile remakes of Final Fantasy games for Square Enix. Oh, it was also directed by Yoshinori Kitase, who directed Final Fantasy VI, he directed Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VIII, Final Fantasy X, and he also produces the games in the Final Fantasy X and Final Fantasy XIII
series.
He didn't
do
games.
9?
No, I think 9... Oh, shoot. I think Sakaguchi might have directed 9 himself, if I'm not mistaken, but I didn't look at the credits.
They weren't... 9 was probably the most drastic difference out of all the other ones. The other ones still had a lot... Because they are... I mean,
of the PlayStation RPGs. So the PlayStation Final Fantasies for sure.
Oh yeah.
Nine is definitely a step back to more of like the Final Fantasy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Because when you get to Final Fantasy VI, you definitely have this turn in the series to bring in these more modern elements. Mm. Specifically things like trains and guns. But anyway, did you have any other thoughts on that? Or that...
I derailed with it. Okay. Blew it.
I see what you did there. Trains, you derailed.
Yeah, well, you know, I got it back.
Also directed, the third director of Chrono Trigger is Akihiko Matsui, who... is he was the battle system designer for Final Fantasy 4 and 5, as well as Final Fantasy 11 and 14. So he works with the MMO Final Fantasy games.
Yeah.
Chrono Trigger was produced by Kazuhiko Aoki. Sorry, Kazuhiko Aoki. And he's mostly a battle designer for a lot of Square and Square Enix games. He also directed Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. But most of the time he's working as a battle designer. And the game had a few writers. It was written by Takahashi Takeda, who's one of the directors as well. Also written by Yoshinori Kitase, also one of the directors. So two of the directors are also credited as writers. And then the other two writers credited are Masato Kato, who is the writer of Xenogears, Chrono Cross, Baton Kaitos for the GameCube, Sands of Destruction for the DS, Legend of Legacy for the 3DS. So this guy's got quite a few hefty RPGs under his belt. Also written by Yuji Horii, who is, of course, of Dragon Quest fame, creator of Dragon Quest, and has been at the helm of that series for quite some time. The art in Chrono Trigger was done by Akira Toriyama, who is the creator of the Dragon Ball series.
Also, he's a guy who rode motorcycles and fought the dude with the big head, right?
Yeah, same guy. He's an he's an animated character. Yes, absolutely.
You see that reference I just did there?
Sure did. And he, Toriyama also does a lot of the art in the Dragon Quest series, and you can see
I think that was the name of the character in that.
Akira? Yeah.
Was that it?
Yeah, you're right.
Oh.
Toriyama does a lot of the art for the Dragon Quest series, and you can see a lot of the connections between Chrono Trigger and Dragon Ball and Dragon Quest. It all has very high fantasy anime aesthetic with characters with huge pointy hair. It's the common thread throughout. And composers. They're composed by a couple of different people. Yasunori Mitsuda, who did the music for Xenogears, Chrono Cross, Shadow Hearts, Xenoblade, which has tremendous music, and the Inazuma 11 series. And Nobuo Uematsu, who did the music for Final Fantasy and The Last Story. Also some really great music there. So basically what I'm getting at here for the past 6 minutes is that there is a huge pedigree. There is a lot of clout with all of the developers behind multiple aspects of this game. So going into it, expectations were probably very high. And what they got out of it was probably one of the most memorable and highly praised RPGs ever. Yes?
Yeah, definitely.
So let's actually get a little bit more personal here. It feels kind of weird now that the lights are back on. I feel we should turn them off at this point.
I just have one question for you.
Yeah.
You want to be the big spoon or the little spoon?
Little.
Little?
Yeah. Okay. let's talk about your first time playing this game. Do you remember how you first played?
I played it originally on the PlayStation.
Uh-huh.
That was years ago. I can't really think of anything.
It was the.
I was a weird lad in high school, and like.
It was, of course, on the on the PlayStation 1 disc. You played it on PlayStation 1 hardware, yes.
I think I played it on my PS2.
Oh yeah. Okay. So probably more. This is definitely more recent than, you know, 1995 that you were playing it. You were looking post 2001.
I wasn't playing games like this when I was 7. No.
I played it a little bit on emulators way back in the day. Back when I tinkered with emulators when they were a thing in the early 2000s.
Favorite emulator was Fire Emblem Sacred Stones.
Yeah.
Because you can do the save states in that on the emulator, true. And you can go right up to the Colosseum and just level everybody up on, like, the third mission.
Yeah.
and it's someone, something ridiculous.
If someone dies, save state.
Stay safe.
And you give me shit for using battle saves and Path of Radiance. Sorry, Radiant Dawn.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I still played it the regular way.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. On the GBA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still did that. There's way. Another option.
But
the way it was intended without cheating.
The way God intended games to be played. I played this a little bit on emulation, but, you know, keyboard for me is not an ideal setup, mostly because you're using the arrow keys, which I suppose you can customize, but I don't really tinker with it too much back on emulators. But playing like with the directionals in your right hand and your action buttons in left-handers reversed where you from what you would do with a normal game controller. So
yeah, I never particularly
liked the setup. But anyway, when I actually did play through start to finish was actually the DS version, which came out November 25th, 2008. So about 8 years ago now, nearly 8 years ago is the first time I ever played Chrono Trigger. And the DS version, it does have, like, they did updated animations. Well, they actually did actual animations for the PS1 version. And, which of course were not in the Super Nintendo version, and the DS version had those animations. It was more of a port of the PS1 version. Other than that,
I should get this for my DS.
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh my god.
It's really nice to be able to, like, watch something else while you're playing Chrono Trigger, or take it with you on the go. It's really cool to just have available on
a
portable system.
It's a great game for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you, when you first played the game, had you ever heard of it before? Or was it, like, on a Final Fantasy compilation disc?
I think it was on the compilation disc. Yeah. I think I borrowed it from you, even.
Yeah?
I want to say that. I don't think I actually bought it. I may still have your copy, if that's the case.
Okay. Now, see... Wow, I can't even remember if that's my copy or not. That's how long it's been.
Yeah, it's been a really long time.
But if that is my copy, because back in the PS1 and PS2 days, that's where I ended up catching up on a lot of RPGs that I had missed in the Super Nintendo generation because I had a Genesis. I didn't have a Super Nintendo. So
I guess your parents just didn't love you enough.
Right. So, like, Final Fantasy 1 and 2, I had a PS1 disc. I also had the Dawn of Souls GBA cartridge, but I believe that was after the PS1 remakes, Maybe.
Maybe.
No, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
Then we
remember the entire plot to E.T., but we can't remember when we played these games.
Let's break that down. We have seen E.T. how many times in our lives?
Maybe once.
Really? You've only seen
E.T.
once?
I've only seen maybe the one time.
Well, shit, I've seen E.T.
I thought it was super boring.
Many, many times. So I've seen that one movie probably dozens of times. I've bought hundreds of games. I can't remember all the games I've bought.
You've watched hundreds of movies.
Right.
About little aliens.
But not hundreds of times. Well, I don't know. But little aliens.
Come on, there's Paul.
That's the one other one that I can think of, yeah. Which is a really fun movie.
Oh, I love that movie.
But that's neither here nor there. So, yeah, if that is indeed my copy, I probably bought it more for the Final Fantasy game that's also on there, which I believe is Final Fantasy 4, or is it 6?
I know I know for a fact that, I may not have that. I can't remember.
You lost my game?
I'll have to look through my PS, my old PlayStation spot I have on my shelf. I can't play them, but they're going to stay there as decoration.
You have a working PS2 anymore?
No.
That's a bummer.
That stopped working. But I know I have your Final Fantasy 1 2 compilation disc.
Oh, nice.
I know I have that.
I'm never going to play those again.
No, I only got to the Iron Cave in Final Fantasy 1. I said, screw this game, I can't figure it out.
Final Fantasy 2. That's the one. I want to take this side note because I heard something really funny on a different podcast that I want to reference. Final Fantasy 2. That is the one. Have you ever played it?
No, I haven't.
That's the one. Square experimented with the system to where your actions in battle influence your stat growth. So if you're attacked, if you do mostly like physical attacks, you're more likely to gain attack power. If you're using magic attacks, you're more likely to gain magic power. The more hits you take in battle, the higher your defense. The more your enemy misses you, like the higher your speed or agility will go. So the way that the battles work out determine the outcome of your stat growths, which it's messy because sometimes characters will grow in ways you do not want them to. So you'll end up having like this character who you mean to be tanky, but he'll end up just a mage, just by virtue of the way the battles work out. There is a way to game the system, though, by attacking your own characters.
Oh my god!
So you can turn your... So if you're fighting a battle against a weaker enemy, you can just basically grind up on your own characters by attacking them with like physical and magical attacks.
You
want to
grind up on your characters.
Right, you're grinding up on yourselves.
Yeah, all right.
And should we turn the lines, let the lights back off? And I believe it was, what podcast was it? I think it was a podcast called Axe of the Blood God, which is an RPG-focused podcast that US Gamer does. And I forget who it was on the show that he called, he or she, I can't remember who it was, called Final Fantasy II, "Stop Hitting Yourself, the Game." which is tremendous. That's a great joke. I have to throw throw a reference out to those guys, because
if you got it right.
Right. I'm pretty sure it was either way is a good podcast.
If not, screw those guys.
If you like RPGs, yeah. If it's not their joke, fuck them. No, that's a good show. It's not as good as this one, but it's good.
Well, you know. Who can beat us?
Right. We just sit here talking about what other people say on their podcasts.
This is the podcast where we discuss podcasts.
That would be good. That would be a good show. Let's do like an after show for other people's podcasts.
Well, how did you feel about blah, blah, blah on this podcast tonight, John? Well, I think she did all right, but, you know, I think her points were a little...
She didn't bring her A game. She kind of slept a walk through this one. Anyway, so...
What's wrong with this?
So I did have access to a copy of Chrono Trigger, apparently, but I didn't actually play it until I had the DS version.
Maybe we should talk about the actual game now.
Yeah, let's talk about Chrono Trigger. We're 18 minutes in here.
Why not?
So...
I've already talked about spooning another podcast.
So I'm not exactly sure. Like, did you have any idea what sort of game Chrono Trigger was? Like, had you heard of it before, or did you just kind of stumble into it?
I think it was one of those things where everybody was like, you gotta play this. This is phenomenal. I think it was one of those things where it was just... Like Final Fantasy VII, I didn't play that until everybody's like, you really should play this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even play that one until after I played 10.
Oh, really?
That's how far in this series that I actually got around to playing it.
That's an interesting reversal, because you have this game that gets a lot of credit for modernizing and popularizing, and then you have Final Fantasy X, which is, in a lot of ways... Maybe not so much as 9, but a reversal back to the more turn-taking roots of the series, because the battle system in 10 is very much more of just a straight-up turn-take. It doesn't have that active time bar that came into Final Fantasy, I think, in Final Fantasy 3.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
I mean, that's just the way I work. I hate playing games if I haven't played their prequels.
I hate playing games, too.
Even if they're not related. Like, 7 and 10 had basically nothing to... In comics, except they're called Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
But like everything, really, I hate doing that. So, I mean, I played 10. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I went back and played all the other ones.
Good.
So
it's a good way to approach it. Know where you're coming from. But I don't know if... I don't think I was even aware of what sort of game Chrono Trigger was outside it was an RPG, and a lot of people really loved it. So... Going into it, I probably expected it to be more of like a straight up Final Fantasy sort of game with like an active time bar and most of like the Final Fantasy tropes with characters who have like some sort of customization. But, you know, instead of like a lot of the typical Final Fantasy stuff that you were getting out of Square at the time, you get this game that departs from a lot of the typical RPG mechanics and formulas, and also refine some of the time tested mechanics as well, but becomes this genre defining, generation defining RPG of the system. Let's get into the nitty gritty here. Let's talk about the battle system. So I think it's important to start with that they do something very good with the battle system of this game, that they make the battles not random. You can see your enemies out on the field. And, well, it's semi-random, because sometimes enemies will pop out at you and be like, surprise, you're in a fight now.
Surprise, Carfag. Just, I mean...
Yeah, exactly. And I think that having... Because you don't get that splash screen. You don't get that transition from the map that you're moving around on into... a battle screen.
Yeah, I forgot about that. They just spread out then, mm-hmm. right on the map where, right when you bump into them,
yeah,
you just go straight in.
Your characters are following your party leader, and then, like, hey, enemies, everyone scatters, and then you're in the battle.
You're just going at it.
And I think that the lack of that transition screen between the world and the battle, it all takes place in that same space, it makes for a much smoother experience, because... You're in the world, you're moving around, you're exploring, you're in a fight, and then you're immediately back moving
into
the world.
You feel more pulled into the world, immersed
and
into the world.
That's a great way of playing it, because I think one of the things people really love about this game is the world, and people talk about like the narrative of the game being really great. And I think that a lot of that has to do with you feel really connected with the with this world that you're moving around in. And part of that is that it never really pulls you out. Yeah. You're just always in it. And yeah. it's a really important way of building
the,
up that.
And all the different areas that you're going to are drastically different. And they have their so much depth to it all. You start in like this little castle town going through the woods. The next thing you know, you're in this rundown future of decay, ruins, and things like that. And then after that, you're fighting pretty sword dinosaurs. Like, it's just, they're throwing you all over the place.
But you always feel like you are occupying the same space at different times. Like, yes. there's connections between the world. And it's really smart the way they do this, because that you start off, of course, and it's like 1000 AD is the year they call it. And it's very medieval. It's fantasy, but not like really high fantasy, because there are things like that. There's your friend who makes robots and stuff. So
Marl, it, right? No, that's
no, Luca.
Chick. That's Luca. Luca. Yeah, Marl is the other chick.
The pre-app princess Nadia, the one who the princess, the spunky princess is
on the adventure. Is that her name, Marl? Is it Nadia?
And, well, that's her real name, but you
meet her as Marl.
Yeah, that's the identity she assumes when she's out mingling with the commoners.
All right,
but. You, what it does is that it throws you back 400 years previous, so things are very much laid out similarly. It's just older and it's a little bit more medieval. Mm-hmm. So it's a really smart way of showing you, like, you're going to be jumping around and things are going to be generally similar, but the further you move in either direction in time, the more different things get. So they did that really, like, they did a really smart thing there with, you know, it's a grandmother paradox little mini story where Marl's mother is killed, and so she disappears. So then you have to go back and save her mother so that she exists again. You know, it's a tried and true, let's say, trope of time travel storytelling. Yeah. And but it suits
the. At one point, like, Frog blows up a wall and then.
Is like blown up in the future or something.
I think so. Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean they do these things throughout the game where you feel your impact on the world jumping from time period to time period, which again is something, like you were saying earlier, really pulls you into the world and enhances that sense of immersion, because what you're doing matters across these multiple time periods.
Yeah.
But it's really smart that they didn't make a huge time jump in between, so you kind of settle in and actually realize what you're supposed to be doing. But then that's when you go to that dystopian future,
yeah,
where you're introduced to, like, you see the outcome of what is going to happen if you don't beat Lavos. Mm-hmm. And then that really becomes like the crux of the game. You are trying to beat Lavos because he is going to destroy the world 1,000 years after Chronos' time period.
Yeah, you're gonna be long dead in the ground dust
right
before this guy even like shows up to sneeze, and you're like, we gotta stop him.
Right, he's not destroying Chrono and Marl's or Luca's or Frog's. He's not destroying any of their world. He's destroying Robo's world is really what he's doing.
Yeah.
But anyway, there's I want to get back to the battle system before we go down too many more rabbit holes here, which I'm totally fine with. If you got a rabbit hole,
oh yeah, this is gonna be a long one, guys. Strap in. This is a fantastic game, one of our favorites.
But I'll always loop us back around.
I'm going to GameStop tomorrow in the middle of my work and look for this in the DS.
Look at the Chrono Trigger.
Oh my god, I want to play this right now. I'm kind of twitching.
So, in your battles, your position matters. So your characters will scatter, but you have all these different skills. You have you have your attack skill, and then you have your tech skills, which are basically your magic skills.
Yeah, your
they take up MP.
Junk.
But it's also, you can like use sword techniques, or like Luca, she'll like throw a bomb and things like that, or use a flamethrower. And what you'll do is they have different effects. You can, it'll either like attack one enemy, you can attack like a line of enemies or a radius of enemies, and it's going to be position sensitive. So if there are a bunch of enemies grouped together and you have an attack that will attack like a radius of enemies, you're going to be hitting them all with the one technique. So it's...
But there isn't like ways to fix your positioning.
Not that
I could think of.
Not that seems super reliable. Like there are ways. I don't know if there are ways where you can like use one character to draw aggro and get enemies to group around them.
That would be nice.
Sometimes like enemies will change their position. Like they'll inch closer to a certain character, and that's when you can exploit techniques to do a bunch of damage to different enemies. But I don't know if there is an actual way to force that to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be cool. Maybe in the sequel. Which, I don't, maybe toward the end we can talk a little bit about Chrono Cross, because I put like 5 or 6 hours into it. And let's see. Oh, there is one really weird thing. Most of your characters, I think only two of your characters don't use magic. It's
Robo
and Cave Girl. Aya, I think is how you pronounce her
name.
I
think she used Earth magic.
No. No, well, not that I'm aware. I should try again, because the last time...
I think it was just Robo.
And like, the way that you make them able to use magic is you have to go to the end of time, you know, that little, the hub place, and you have to talk to the one guy. It's like, oh, hey, you're new, you use this type of magic, and then they can use it.
Yeah.
So you can conceivably go through the game with a few characters not even knowing how to do magic. Like, yeah. they'll get, like, other techniques.
Bows will take forever.
Right, right. But they will learn other techniques, but there will be, like, team-up techniques, which is something we didn't really touch on. Depending on who you have
in battle. Oh, yeah, there were a couple of those. Forgot about that.
Depending on who you have in battle, they'll be able to, like, team up when it's, you know, when they're both of their active time bars are full and use even more powerful techniques. So even though you don't have things like a job system, you know, who you have in your party will matter. And there are elemental alignments to where things will be more effective on certain bosses.
But it's not that important. The elemental alignment isn't, like, crucial. Like, you have to use these at these...
No,
you use one, whoever you want, generally whenever you want. But there are certain benefits.
Yeah, there are definitely benefits. But you can get through the game like with whatever party you feel like using. It's possible.
I mean, what did you mostly run with, John?
I liked a Marley and Frog.
I was the same.
Because, well, you're kind of doubling up on your water elemental there, because Marley's using ice and Frog is using water. And Chrono I always had in my party as well. I think I forgot to mention that.
I don't think you can get rid of him. You have to run.
You can switch Chrono out, especially toward the end of the game. You can run with an entirely different party, no Chrono. Because you can actually beat the game without Chrono. We'll get to that in a bit.
Dear God.
So
I thought he was a...
He's not a permanent party.
So he always ran with him, because he was the best anyways.
Yeah.
The guy
was
a monster. He used, what, lightning magic?
He uses lightning magic. Him and Frog are using swords, and they're both able to deal quite a bit of damage with their swords. And then both Frog and Marley have healing magic. So you're doubling up on your healers, and Frog is also a very good fighter as well.
Yeah.
So there's really, like, to me, that was a really balanced party.
The thing with Frog I found is that my Frog kept dying a lot.
Yeah?
He just couldn't really take a hit.
Hmm. Interesting. Oh, and also Marley had haste magic, so that's really good, too.
Well, okay, the characters you're able to play, there's Kronos, Luca, Marley, or Marl, whatever, Frog, Robo. What was the last dude? Oh,
Magus. Magus? Yeah,
Magus?
He's the Fiend Lord.
So yeah.
He's a character who you first meet... in the time period, I think it's 12,000 BC. So it's after the prehistory period. But you meet him... Well, actually, you meet him in, like, the 600 BC era. You meet him as a grown-up. He's the guy who curses Glenn into being a frog. And that's how you get Frog. And he is leading, like, this fiend army. And I forget what his motive... Like, he had a traumatized childhood. Oh, it's because of his sister.
Yeah.
His sister was, like, sacrificed or something. And you meet, like, the young version of him in the 12,000 BC period, which is an interesting one because, like, the general, like, the continent of the planet's surface is all frozen over in ice, but there's floating islands. And that's, like, the time period where you get to, like, the really high fantasy stuff, things, like, with, like, lots of magic and airships and shit.
Mm.
But that's where you meet, like, the child version of him. And then... You fight him before you meet him as a kid. And I forget how he joins up with your party.
Which was really, like, when I was playing this, I was like, why on earth am I suddenly have this guy in my party? Like, I remember fighting him going, this guy is freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, because he was like, the way he's portrayed in the game, he's super evil. This guy is messed up.
Yeah.
And then you beat him, he's like, all right, we're cool now. And then,
yeah, everything's fine.
Wreck shit.
And Frog's like, Frog is like, can I be a human again? No, it's fine.
You're fine.
All right.
Don't worry about it. Your legs are delicious.
Can you at least call me Glenn? No, you're Frog.
You're Frog.
Still kind of an asshole. But yeah, so yeah, those are the party members that you get. And this game doesn't really do much with, like, temporary party members or things like that. Like, there are a couple of party members who are with you for a little bit, and then they leave, and then bring them back in, and you can just use them whenever. But, like Frog, you get to use for a little bit, and then he leaves, and Cave Girl, whose name I wish I had written down.
Which her part, I'd probably say, is the weakest in the story. So she really, that whole point was just...
Well, it's
just get through. All right, they're dinosaurs. All right, this lizard man is using magic, and he's got a big dinosaur. I don't care. Let's just kill him.
And that's really like the origins of Lavos. Like, you see, like, this asteroid that has Lavos in it crash into Earth. So, like, he's crashing into Earth like 65,000 BC and not waking up to destroy it till like 1999 AD, which is, I didn't realize that it was like 1999 that he was like waking up and destroying the Earth. It's an interesting year, and I wonder if it has some sort of significance.
So Y2K? Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Maybe, but like, just like for Japanese culture in particular, because jumping over the Castlevania series, in 1999 in the Castlevania timeline, not the Lords of Shadow one, I don't know fuck all about that one, but in the mainline Castlevania timeline, 1999 is when Julius Belmont kills Dracula for good. And he never comes back. So I wonder if it has like some sort of special significance.
Huh.
I don't know. I could ask a Japanese person, I suppose.
You're racist. Next one, just gotta go down the road and be like, hey, you're Japanese. What's the deal with your culture? I'm from Cleveland. Come on, man. Don't show yourself short.
And I'm Korean, you ass. Anyway.
As long as you don't bow to him when you first greet the... How are you doing? Just...
That would be fucked up.
Come on, man.
All right. Where were we? Anything else you want to say about the battle system before we move on here?
Cat walks by. You just tell him, calm down, buddy.
That's Chinese. Get your stereotypes right. So, and actually, one other thing that I do want to say about the battle system is that it's sort of the antithesis of, like, Final Fantasy VII, which would be the next... Square developed RPG after this one, where like in Final Fantasy VII, the whole materia system essentially makes party members interchangeable. So you can equip any materia to any character, and they just sort of morph to suit that role. But party members in Chrono Trigger make a big difference on the outcome. That's really basically what I was saying. And then, you know, having that control over your party. Over your party members to have a different outcome in battle, again, lends to that immersion into the game that you were mentioning earlier. So you still have that active time bar that I was talking about before. I think I've referenced that a couple of times. There's a couple of different ways you can do it. You can have the active, like, you can have the battles always active so that, like, while you're, like, when your time bar is full and you go to select a move, other things can be going on, or you can switch that off and have everything pause when you're selecting your move, which is usually what I did. It makes the battles last a little bit longer, but it also gives you a little bit more control so that you're not taking damage while you're trying to select a move. There are like typical RPGs, weapons, armor, helmets. You have your equipables. There aren't really too many, though. I think it's just like your armor, your weapon, and maybe a helmet and maybe an accessory. But there's really, like, they don't go into, like, hands and feet and all that other stuff that you see in some more...
A lot of the game is pretty simplistic. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty, I don't want to say dumbed-down RPG, it's just a clean, simplistic one.
Clean is a good way of putting it, because it doesn't...
It's not confusing. You know exactly what you're doing when you go right into it. You're never sitting here like, all right, how the hell do I do this? It's straightforward.
Yeah, and it doesn't muddle things up with too many systems. Like items, consumable items, they exist, but you don't really need them all too much. Like, I don't remember even if there are status ailments in this game and what they are. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to do things like stock up on items that cure status ailments, because they're hardly important. I think the items that I used the most were items that were restoring you your MP. I didn't really...
Oh, yeah, you burn through that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could be because you should be using your skills all the time. Yeah. It's your best way of attacking.
This is a game where the battle system and everything is very straightforward, very clean, very entertaining. It's very well done. But I feel like this game focuses... They do all that to focus heavily on the story element of this. It's a very immersive game that really wants to just tell a big story. You're playing through a movie.
Yeah, there is a lot of narrative going on here. And the narrative suits the purpose of pointing you in the right direction, which I can't remember what RPG I was talking about earlier on a different show, but it was doing the same thing. And most RPGs do this. They have to use narrative to point you in the right direction because they have these worlds, these world maps that you go into, and you don't really know where you're supposed to go next. Mm-hmm. So they use narrative as the conduit to point you in the right direction. And in Chrono Trigger, you really do have to rely on that a lot, because if you're an idiot and you skip text like me, you have no idea where you're going.
Yep.
Not a clue. And they do, like, some of the hints are very subtle. Like, at a certain point, like, once you open up the End of Time and there's a couple of portals open, it's really not super clear which one you're supposed to go into next. There's a point where, like, you can go into prehistory, like the 65,000 BC era. You can go into there before there's really anything to do there.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be wandering around just like,
all right, this is cool. This is, we're fighting dinosaurs and shit. All right, nothing going on here. Time to move on.
Yeah.
So it lends itself to that sort of exploration, but when you really want to get down to brass tacks, you have to be paying attention to the story. Like the narrative and storytelling is one of the strong sensibilities that came to be in the 16-bit era of RPGs, and this one definitely embraces it. It's one of the things people like most about the game, I find, is the story. I don't really talk about story a whole lot in games. I don't really have too much to say. Do you have anything to say about the story? Do you remember any of the things that go on?
I don't remember a whole lot of details with it, but it was something I was very immersed in at the time. I keep saying mm-hmm. immersed since we used it at one point earlier.
it's the word of the show.
It's the word of the show.
I mean, it does.
You said the word of the show.
It does say, I'm aware. I was going to gloss right over it.
All right.
But they do a couple of fun things with the story when it comes to, like, the time travel elements of it. Like, there's a point, and like a lot of things you may have seen before or since. So they, like I mentioned, the grandmother paradox thing. There's a thing early on where they're like, there's a war on a bridge in the past, so you can't access it in the present. So when you go back to the past and stop and win the war on the bridge, you can then cross over in the present. And again, that's you feeling your impact on the world. And
you would think they're just, you know, find a way across the river.
Sure, like, or
I think there'd be a lot easier than going back in time and changing the element.
That is the only place you can build a bridge, and once it's destroyed, it's gone forever.
There's no way. You'll never see that side of the continent again.
Hey, you're 400 years in the future, we've lost the technology to build bridges. We have robots, but not bridges. So, what are the other cool, like, storytelling elements in this game? They do that, that thing from Futurama, or rather Futurama does that thing from Chrono Trigger where Robo stays in the past. I can't remember why, to like guard something or something like that. And then you catch up with him again in the present. He's all rusted over and Luca's got to fix him. So I can remember.
It's funny. Yeah.
Yeah, in Futurama.
They do that like, with the Roswell episode.
And they like dig up his head and he's like, what was it like laying there for 1,000 years? I was enjoying it until you assholes showed up. Or like jerkwads, whatever it was that Bender said.
Yeah, something like that.
And like I mentioned before, you get to see Lavos crash into the planet. So, like a lot of the, like as many of like the different like directed beats and linear beats that the story hits, we mentioned before, there's a bunch of different endings. So it does leave this openness for how you are completing the story, because I think as soon as like the End of Time opens up, you can go and fight Lavos. You can do it at any point.
Yeah, that was one of the first things to do, like because you could just reboot into the game.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time I beat it, I immediately went.
Yeah,
before I did anything else, I immediately went and fought Lavos again and got that second ending.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you get that New Game Plus, which I don't recall if that has happened
before that
in an RPG. Maybe it has, but certainly not in any of the RPGs we've spoken about so far. Mm-hmm. Has that been a thing? But yeah, and you have like 13-ish different endings to the game.
I'm going to look at right now while we're on the air some of the different methods to get those.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious on this.
Do your thing. I'm going to ramble for a second. And like some of the endings you can get or some like the regular story does have some pretty surprising twists. For example, at a certain point in the story, Chrono dies. And this is what I was talking about before, how you can finish the game without Chronos.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. He does.
And then you bring him back through a series of events throughout the main story. But when Chrono dies, you can then go fight Lavos and finish the game without Chrono. And that, of course, gets you a different ending. And, like, depending on where you are in the story and who's in your party and what things you've accomplished will affect the ending.
That's how you do it. The manner in which, no matter what, all game endings revolve around fighting Lavos.
Yeah.
The manner in which you face it and the point in the storyline in which you do changes the ending you see.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about different points that you go and fight him and do it.
Should we have said that there were spoilers for this 21-year-old game? Nah, fuck it.
It's pretty... If there's anything that you're spoiled... You beat Lavos in the end.
You beat the bad guy.
Oh my god, it's crazy.
I mean, I think probably the most surprising thing that happens in this game is when Chrono dies, which is, what, 80%, 75% of the way into the game? Because once you resurrect
Chrono...
It's
still worth playing.
Yeah, I don't think there's too much else to happen.
It's not going to be like anything drastic like it, because, I mean, he's the main freaking character, and you're playing through him 80% of the game... They're going to bring him back. They're freaking doing time travel. It's assumed we're going to get this dude back. So even if you haven't played the game before, I don't think it's going to be ruining it to anybody.
I mean, I guess. It was probably pretty surprising back then when Chrono dies. But I actually did want to draw this reference earlier in the show when I was talking about the writers. And I mentioned this writer specifically, well, for two reasons. One, he's credited as a writer. And also, Masato Kato, one of the writers in this game, also wrote Baten Kaitos, the GameCube RPG. And it also has a twist with the main character probably about 70-80% of the way into the game. So in Baten Kaitos, your main male protagonist character doesn't die, but he turns out to be a villain. So you have this heel turn where your main character then betrays your entire party and you fight against him for a few hours in the game before he realizes the error of his ways and rejoins your party. So, much like in Chrono, and it was interesting to me because it's the same writer and it's happening twice in these games that he was involved with the writing on. It's just interesting that they hit that same beat again. And it makes sense because it is the same writer for him to use this sort of literary device again. But I don't know, it struck me as interesting when Baten Kaitos came up in as one of the writer's credits. I was like, oh yeah, Chrono dies. And the main character in Baten Kaitos turns out to be a huge dick. You know, that and he leaves your party for a time.
Oh. Then he like finds the error of his ways and comes back.
Yeah. And then that's really the connection. In Chrono Trigger, you lose your main character for a time and he comes back. And in Baten Kaitos, you lose your main character for a time and he comes back.
I'm flipping through these. One ending is if you don't do this certain area and then go fight Lavos and then lose. You watch it. You watch the apocalypse.
So wait, if you
lose to Lavos, there's a certain point in the game if you avoid this, something about a palace, I forget what.
Okay.
And then go fight Lavos. Do the rest of the game, then go fight Lavos, and then die. It'll show you the apocalypse.
So wait, if you die versus Lavos in other endings, it doesn't show you that?
I don't know.
Interesting.
I just read that.
Okay.
The bad ending, it said. And there's another one where Chrono and Marley are like, they get back and Mary's like hanging a bell. And then you give them a hand, and then they're holding onto balloons or something, and then the two of them float off into the night sky. That's another ending. Like, it's really...
They float away in balloons?
Yeah.
Okay. Are they dead?
I'm just reading this online. I don't know if this is legit. I have no idea. And that's the...
We can't... I don't think the internet would lie about Chrono Trigger. It's held way too dear.
For our heroin ending, I think that was really good.
Yeah. So anyway, and one other thing that I want to touch on before we get into to some other more superficial things here. You do have this overworld. Like, you do have a world map, but it's very different from other RPG world maps because you're not getting into battles there. You're only getting into battles in your specific dungeon-type areas. The overworld map is more of a level select. It's actually akin to something like Demon's Crest that we talked about a few months ago in the show, where you're flying throughout this overworld map and just entering different areas, and that's where all your action is taking place. So this makes sense, because your overworld, I think you want it to be streamlined in a game like this, because your overworld is really what's tying all of your worlds together. It's going to give you the most visual impact when you enter a new era, how much things are the same, how much things are different, and it gives you that immediate impact. And then also, it gives you, I think, like having it more streamlined with no battles in it also gives you that bigger sense of immersion that we keep on talking about over and over again. Yeah, you said that. Because it gets you to the next area quicker. You're not mucking around getting into battles when you're trying to find your next place. You're just going there. The game looks really nice.
It does.
It's a really nice looking game. It's probably one of the best aged Super Nintendo games. And, you know, all of the Square Enix RPGs.
And even the little cinematics that they added in years later also look pretty good.
Yeah, still. Yeah, like the little anime cutscenes. Yeah,
the frog chops the giant stone wall in half.
Which is funny. Like, that's the first one that comes to my mind, too. I think it's probably one of the first ones that you get. But it's funny because in the DS version of the game, you, of course, get that anime cutscene where it's, like, really dramatic and Frog is cutting a hole into the mountain. And then immediately after that plays, you see it play out in, like, the 16-bit graphics. Yep. And it looks so different. And it's just kind of funny that they left them both in there. Like, why not have one or the other?
Although, I think the story of this would make a really good anime. I think they...
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
I keep, like, seeing, like, games or books. I'm like, this would make a really good anime. Fucking do this.
Yeah, and well, you know, I think Square Enix, for some reason, has forgotten the series existed. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Bastards.
But, like, really tremendous sprite work. All of the environments look really great. All of the characters, like, they'll have, like, their own funny little animations. Like, a frog hops around as he's following you. A robo is, like, very stiff as he moves around. And, like,
it looks all clunky as he's running.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And, like, all of the environments have their own personalities. We mentioned the post-apocalyptic one. We mentioned the high fantasy one where there's also an ice age. We mentioned prehistory. I think we've worked through all, like, the major ones there. But, you know, no matter where they drop you in, like, all the different time periods, you immediately know where you are. They're all very distinct. And actually, I do want to talk a little bit more about, like, the futuristic area, the post-apocalypse. It has this, like, Mad Max-style car race in the middle of it. And that car race actually reminds me of the car chase in Midgar in Final Fantasy VII. Except, you know, it's playable. Because that Final Fantasy, that was such a terrible part.
So bad.
And it's a shame because, like, I really love the Midgar opening in Final Fantasy VII. I've heard people say things like, "Oh, you spend a little bit too much time in Midgar." It's only like one of the minor criticisms.
Well, done the whole game in Midgar. Yeah, great.
I could have spent another
make the whole planet Midgar.
Yeah,
and just make us fight in it. Let's just do this.
I really liked the Midgar opening. That was probably the strongest,
the time
and most memorable
we actually
part.
Do go back to Midgar in Final Fantasy VII, I'm like, why the fuck am I back here? Like, it gets to the point where they really separate this fantastic place, and then have you do all this other crap, and you go back, and you feel like you've never seen it before. Like, it's ridiculous.
When I went back to Midgar the first time in Final Fantasy VII, I was actually hoping it was going to be another big sequence that would lead to the climax of the game. And, you know, you do a little bit of things there, but you don't really revisit a lot of the same areas. I suppose you could to see how far you've come. But I don't know. I just really liked the aesthetic. It was such a different area for a Final Fantasy game, especially at the time, to explore this big city and have a lot of your action take place in this big city. I don't know. Just really memorable. And I wish there was more Midgar. Let's make a whole game in Midgar. Anyway, where were we? We already talked about a lot of the other environments. So I don't think we need to spend too much time on there. Really great soundtrack.
Yep.
Really fantastic. Very good music. And actually,
and hopefully you're putting some music in here. Not the ones we've already used 1,000 times. Come on, man. When was the last time you put fresh music in one of these podcasts?
I don't know. I'm trying to post this tomorrow. We'll see what happens. I don't put fresh music in here because it lets me edit faster. I don't have to, like, slave over. Okay, what music do I need to rip off
here?
I'm
sure there's a few people that are, like, avid listeners to this. You know, that listen to everything. They're like, oh, this freaking song again.
You know what? If you bring different music, I will put it in. I will leave that to you and Ryan. I will tell you the names of the games we are talking about. And if you want to bring related music.
I'm not going to, like, bring it on, like, a jump track.
Yes, it's going to have to happen. It's going to have to happen that way. Oh, and I turned the soundtrack on at work and was listening to it at my desk at work for a couple hours as I was doing some other stuff.
I've been listening to a lot of, like, 8-bit stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like, you never played it, but Scott Pilgrim vs. the World game.
Oh, sure.
That has fantastic music, and there's people that did that. I've been listening to a lot of their stuff.
Cool.
It's been very entertaining.
So, we're going into the home stretch here. Chrono Trigger, highly influential game. But for some reason, only spawned one sequel, which was Chrono Cross. And Chrono Cross, I might as well get into for a couple of minutes here, because I have been playing. I've been playing for 5 hours. It is quite different. It does not do a lot of the interesting things with battles that Chrono Trigger does. It is very much more of a standard JRPG, rather than trying to streamline different mechanics and elements, or refine different mechanics and elements. It reverts very much back to your active time. Well, this is actually more of a straight up turn taking game, but like rather than like using a lot of skills in battle, what happens is when it's your character's turn in battle, they essentially have an allotted number of actions they can take, or an allotted number of attacks, I should say, because they can't use more than one item. So when you hit the attack button, you have like a weak, medium, and strong attack. And they each essentially cost a different number of points, and you can use them until your points are used up. However, your strong attack is going to be inaccurate, but you can make it more accurate by using weaker attacks first. So you have like this
build up to it.
Right. So you have this sub menu within your attack command, so where it's like asking you which, if you want to use your first, second, or third attack, third is the strongest. And then you can then follow it up with an elemental attack, a magic attack. I'm going to try to read up a little bit more about the elemental system in this game, because right now it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. But it's definitely something that's going to be important to enjoying the battles, because I'm not, at this point, like just using those three attacks and spamming the attack button over and over again is not fun in an RPG. So I think that understanding and exploiting that elemental system is going to be key to getting the most out of this as possible. It's weird though, because elemental attacks are basically your magic attacks, and like the name implies, there are different elements in the game, standard fantasy stuff. There is a diagram in the corner of the battle screen that indicates which element has the strongest influence over that battle. And like if you're using your characters to use a lot of fire elemental stuff, it increases the influence of fire and it makes your fire stuff stronger. So it is to your benefit to either use your elements to suppress what the enemy is using, because if the enemy is using a lot of water and you're using a lot of something else, it's going to increase your influence and decrease theirs, make their stuff weaker.
Okay.
Right now, it just seems to be like I haven't found a way to maintain my elemental influence in a meaningful way, because it's just basically swapping. Like one of my guys will use an earth elemental, one of them will use a water. Another one of my guys will use an earth, they'll use another water. It just trades back and forth. So there's got to be some sort of way to help maintain my influence over it. And it also doesn't help that most of these spells, these magic spells that you can use, you use once per battle, and then you can't use it again.
That's odd.
Yeah, which is very weird. And you only have like a pool of maybe 10 different spells that you can have equipped. So, I mean, the battles really haven't been lasting very long. Even boss battles have been able to finish off pretty quick. So I don't know. I think that the game doesn't do a great job of showing you how important those elements are and how to fully exploit them toward the beginning. And part of that might be functional, just like everything is there at the beginning. Like all six of your different elements are just present and you can use them. And I think it would have been better if they started smaller and focused on building as they went. But anyway, this isn't the Chrono Cross podcast. I'm sure I'll talk about that one again in the future. I don't know. I think they've also tried to draw a comparison or influence from Chrono Trigger in that there are two alternate worlds, and rather being time periods, it's like dimensional stuff. So in one world, your main character is alive and lives in this village, and then by some happenstance, he gets pulled in this other dimension where he died when he was a kid and no one knows him anymore. And again, I think they're going for a strong narrative pull here. Like, there is very story heavy, but I have a hard time figuring out what the goal of the character is. Like, is he trying to... Because I'm at a point where he can just go back to his own world. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he's trying to figure out what happened to himself in the new one. There's, like, this organization of people who are trying to get him in the alternate universe where he's dead. I don't know why. Maybe because he's supposed to be dead and they want to figure out why he's not. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be... important. I can just like go back and live in the world that I came from. I don't. Why not just do that? I don't know.
Maybe there's a hot chick in the other one.
She's in both, and in one where yeah. you're not, and in one where you're not dead, she knows you. There's no reason to go to the other one where she doesn't know you.
Well, that's probably the thing. She doesn't know me in the other one, so maybe I can get her.
Maybe like having made a bad impression or something.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know. From the beginning, she seemed to be pretty.
I don't know, maybe I doogied my pants in front of her while I was in the shower or something like that. That was it.
You're labeled for life.
That's it. You're done. You dookie in front of a hot chick, then you're done. I mean, that's roll credits on that game.
Kill yourself. You're done.
You might as well. You're done, son. You're done.
There's actually another game. I don't know. Have you heard of I Am Setsuna?
Sounds familiar.
That one is a game that is available on Steam and the PS4. And that one is I've listened to... Actually, the podcast I mentioned earlier, Acts of the Blood God, they mentioned that game a couple of times.
Yeah, why don't you go do their podcast, John? Why don't you join them for theirs, all right?
I mean, I might. That'd be great. I'd love to be on that show. Leave you assholes behind.
Oh, my God. What would you do without me, John?
I would sit in the dark alone and talk to people over the internet. Ah, that sounds awful.
You'd probably be a lot happier.
No, we're much better off doing this in the same room. But that's a game that's compared to Chrono Trigger a lot. Apparently it draws a lot of inspiration from Chrono Trigger. So that is interesting. That sounds interesting to me. So, I don't know. I don't know why Square Enix has never really gone with a true sequel that adopts the same mechanics or similar mechanics to this game. Because Chrono Cross is just such a different game mechanically.
They really nailed it, too. How many things can you think of the game that it could have done better?
And maybe that's it. Maybe that, like, there was nothing more to do there. Like it's fucking Nintendo and F-Zero. They're like, well, no, I mean,
F-Zero. We did it. We did it right the first time. Move on to something else.
Yeah, F-Zero for the GameCube. Like, what else do you want? It's like, you want more tracks? Who cares? Play those. Like, there's nothing else we can do with this. And maybe that's like, maybe, like.
It's a bad analogy because F-Zero is a bad game.
Ryan's not here to defend it. But like maybe they don't think that they can assemble like the same talent that they had for a sequel.
I mean, I'm sure they can. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's no excuses. This is fantastic. Bring give us more.
Well, let's talk about this for a minute here. What would you want out of a sequel? Would you want like the same battle system and stuff, just like a different narrative to follow? Would you want, like, I feel like time travel has to be part of it, because it's such
Definitely. Maybe I don't know, really, because there isn't, like, a whole lot you would change about the PAL system, even. It'd be pretty, I would think it'd be similar to it. It wasn't time-based, right? It was straight-up turn-taking.
Well, there was an active time bar, but yeah. You could make it to where it was a little bit more...
I think there was an option to turn that off.
Yeah, I was talking about that earlier. There is the option to turn that off.
I think that's how I played it, because I really like those standstills where you can just plan it out.
It makes it more methodical. That's the word I was looking for. It makes it where you can think through things a little bit more, which is nice.
It's funny that you couldn't think of that.
Yeah. Thanks.
Not very methodical of you.
But I don't know. I mean, I think that time travel is important, feeling your impact on the world. I mean, they could probably, like, with more modern sensibilities, play up the time travel a little bit more and have things that you do impact future worlds. And maybe you're the cause of the world being destroyed. Like the whole thing they did in The Simpsons, where Homer goes back and, like, steps on a butterfly or something.
Morty.
And ends up destroying the world. So he has to keep on going back and trying to adjust things. And maybe that's a big part of what a sequel would look like, is having to go back and try to undo mistakes that you have done. That'd be interesting. Mm. And maybe that factors into multiple endings. Like, maybe if you know the exact right things to do, you can play through it only going back in time once. But do you... I wonder if that... if different time periods could factor into something like that, if you're just swapping back and forth between two. I don't think that exactly captures the spirit of the game, if you're just swapping back and forth between two eras. This is like swapping back and forth between two dimensions. Yeah. It doesn't really feel the same. So I think that having multiple time periods would be essential. But I'm like, the actual battle system, I don't know. I don't know that I would change anything. Like, maybe make it a little bit more friendly to using your techs and magic. Like, maybe make your MP a little bit more player friendly, so you can not have to replenish it all the time and spam your attack button. That's such a minor thing, though.
Yeah.
I wonder what a four-party battle system would look like in a Chrono Trigger game. Would that be too much to manage?
I doubt it. I mean, it was pretty straightforward in the first place.
I mean, then you could, like, well, because you have, like, the different attacks that do, like attack in a line. You could, like, attack in a radius. Even if they could add something there. What other things could you add to that? Like, you attack in a line, you attack in a, like, in a circle. What else could there be? Different shapes would be silly. Want to just do one sort of radial circle attack. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure they could think of something. This game, Chrono Trigger,
yes,
is available on Amazon. You can get a used cartridge for $130.
Yep.
For the Super Nintendo.
Totally worth it.
Mm-hmm. Or you can grab the DS version brand new for $25.
Also totally worth it.
Yep. Yes, indeed. And like we mentioned before, it's available on the PS1 on the Final Fantasy Chronicles, I believe it was, disc. And that was Chrono Trigger and one of the Final Fantasies. I think it was 4, but I'm not sure. And that disc is $20. So, you know, if you got a working PS1 or PS2 lying around, you could do that. But if you're listening to this show, you almost for sure have a working DS or 3DS lying around. So I think that's probably the better way to go. And it's also available on the Wii Virtual Console.
Oh.
But not the Wii U Virtual Console.
Communists.
God damn it. God damn it, Square. What the fuck?
Just port it over.
Right.
It's not tough.
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe. No, we've decided. We've already decided to show that.
Square's not pulling their own weight around here.
Yeah.
Make your lazy asses.
Making games is easy. Why can't you do it
son
better?
Son of a bitch.
But yeah, that's Chrono Trigger. Any other parting shots you want to give to this game that we've now gone on about for an hour?
Not that I can think of.
It's good.
Yeah,
it's good game.
It's very good.
I think that, you know, when we get to a point where we're ready to do a top 15 Super Nintendo, it's almost for sure going to end up on the list.
Oh, yeah.
Because this game, what's...
I mean, why wouldn't it make it to the list?
There's no way that it wouldn't. Like, I think, like, the top three RPGs on the system are probably all from Square. It's Final Fantasy 4, 6, and Chrono Trigger. And just depending on personal preference...
Not in that order.
No, but depending on personal preference, you know, someone like might like one game more than the other. I think that Final Fantasy 6 is still probably my favorite RPG on the system. But, you know, like, when you go to Kobe's, do you get just steak or just chicken? No, you get steak, chicken, and shrimp. You get all three. Like, why would you not?
Okay.
No, I think that's it. I think it's the end.
Yeah.
Is that the end?
That's a good one.
Okay. So, that you're pointing at my notes. There was a different thing that I was thinking about doing if Ryan was going to show up, but it's not going to work with one person.
Oh.
So we'll do it on a different show.
What was it?
Well, it's this. I heard this on a different podcast.
You're stealing some of the room. Another
I
podcast.
Was thinking about stealing someone else's idea and morphing it a little bit to suit our purposes, but what they do...
You're
going to
Zuckerberg. That's messed up, man.
Yeah. I forget which podcast it is. It's not one that I listen to regularly. I think it's an IGN podcast, and they were like guest hosting the Nintendo one, and they played a game called... They played 20 Questions. Like, it's their original idea either. But the host will think of a game, and then they ask him 20 questions to try to narrow it down and figure out what it is.
Oh, that'd be good.
And I was going to do it with a Super Nintendo game and maybe try to throw a twist on it to kind of give it a different flavor, but... Well, we'll save
next
it.
Next time.
We'll save it for another time. Because, I keep trying to come up with games to play on the Super Nintendo, because most of the time we don't go for an hour and 5 minutes.
No.
So, you know, just like a little time filler, something fun to listen to. But, like, you can't really play, is it a Super Nintendo game or is it a Dorito flavor, more than once.
No, you really can't.
Because then you run out. You run out of Dorito flavors. I mean, we did, like, is it a Super Nintendo game or is it a B-movie? And that, you know...
That was pretty good.
Yeah, but that was really hard to put together. I had to read some really terrible movie plots. I don't want to do that to myself again. But the Super Nintendo show is over. The official show is next.
Yep.
The official show, we got a bit of news to talk about. We got some new releases to talk about, and that'll be fun. And then we'll start it all up again with the Pokemon show next month. Oh, and actually, Wes, I wanted to run this by you. Might as well do it on the air. Fuck it. On the Pokemon show, are you interested in doing a top five favorite types?
Ooh.
Not necessarily the best types, just your personal favorites. Yeah.
I'll give it that.
And then we can ridicule each other for liking types.
I pretty much got it right now, so yeah.
There you go. Do it. It's on the show. No, never mind.
Save that for the Pokemon show.
Right.
So you can tell me how wrong I am.
So, and I think it is Ryan's turn to host. Who's that Pokemon? So
maybe want to remind him.
So maybe another one, yeah. I'll shoot him a text. We still got a few weeks. Oh, and one last programming note. I was going to be doing a special show dedicated just to Tokyo Mirage Sessions with our good friend NBZ from the This Nintendo Life podcast.
You're calling him a name, now I hate you, don't you? That's what happened, right?
He forgot.
You dookied it in your pants in front of him.
Yeah, I dookied my pants in front of him. Now he doesn't want to come on the show ever again. That's exactly what happened. He forgot the day we were recording. So I was like sitting there by my computer all sad, like waiting for him to log on Skype like some sort of creeper. I'm like, no, we're friends. He's going to log on any minute now. And like an hour later, I shot him an email. I was like, hey, are we still friends? I was like, hey, are we still doing this thing? And he was like, oh shit, I thought that was tomorrow. Like, no, it was today. So we'll catch up a different time.
Yeah, no big
deal. I mean, unless we set it up again and then he misses it again and says that it was tomorrow, then I think he's fucking with me.
It happens.
Getting trolled by a different podcast host.
Oh my god.
That's it. The end. Till next time.
So long.